This is Talking Business.
I'm joined now by Alexander Pergolinska, who's the assistant professor at Kosminski University. But more importantly, she's a research fellow and she works at MIT in Boston and is visiting Australia for the Creative Innovation Conference that's on at the moment. G'day, Alexandra.
Hi.
You've got a PhD in artificial intelligence.
Yes.
So tell us what artificial intelligence means to you. Is it just simply the combination of Moore's Law and the amount of data that we now have available?
Well, I think you can have many different definitions of artificial intelligence, and one would be just a discipline, a scientific discipline that works with simulating thinking, for instance, or works with generally like creating machines that could behave or think like humans in some ways. So I guess this would be closest thing to my definition of artificial intelligence. But obviously, you can also say that particular items or objects or machines or software are the embodiments of artificial intelligence, and that would be a definition just as good, you know. So a robot or a program like AlphaGo also is artificial intelligence. It is an example of artificial intelligence.
So what's the artificial intelligence that Stephen Hawking says is going to lead to the end of humankind?
Well, I think Stephen Hawking several times already changed his mind about that, because first he said that AI is going to be very transformative but also dangerous for humankind. But then he said that actually capitalism is the biggest problem and not artificial intelligence. So he managed to already change his mind a few times on that. But nonetheless,
okay, but leaving aside Stephen, there's a few people who are worried about artificial intelligence. Not necessarily existential problem, but problem of jobs, threatening jobs, and so on.
Well, yeah, there are several different problems. You know, I mean, one of these people who was very vocal about problems related to AI is, for instance, Elon Musk. But on the other hand, he's also building a big open platform for developing artificial intelligence. So I think all the researchers are aware that there are several different kinds of problems related to AI. One would be a real existential threat, for instance, related with development of autonomous weapons. That's a problem, you know. So autonomous weapons, this kind of project in the field of artificial intelligence is potentially very dangerous for humankind. But there are obviously other risks or problems attached to AI. And one of them would be definitely automation of work and the fact that more and more work will be performed by machines and not humans in the future. And we might end up in a situation that when we work, we're actually lucky that we have that work, because others don't.
Do you think we will end up in that situation?
I think there are many different solutions to that. But I think, we will probably work less than we do now. There is that possibility, which is not necessarily like a bad thing. I think it might be actually a good thing for this whole overworked population of people. And I think, machines can help in optimizing the work and can also enhance our capabilities of performing that work. And that could be a very good thing if we work and focus on that. But I think they can be very disturbing in some cases. People rarely talk about it, but I very often think about, the gender issue when it comes to automation of work. Men have been performing such works as, driving, or they've been working in factories. These jobs will be taken away very soon, you know, and it's very important to address that, because you will have a big amount of people, particularly males, who will not have that work that they had before. So, like, there is an issue of reskilling, finding new professions for them, and filling that gap. And I think if we don't start addressing it now, we might end up having problems in the future.
That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought about that, the gender issue. You're saying that, and it makes sense, that the women's jobs will possibly last longer.
Well, they are harder for AI experts. They are much harder to be algorithmically processed, I would say, in a sense. So when you think about education, for instance, or care, right, elderly care and so on. So these were jobs that were very often performed mainly by women. And women are, in that sense, in a safer situation, because these will not be, I mean, in the nearest future, I cannot really see a scenario where these jobs are easily performed by any kind of technology, because they require certain skills, social, emotional intelligence that is lacking in AI now.
You've been involved in one or two actual humanoid projects. One was called Bina 48. And there was another one, Sophia, which we'll get onto. And I don't quite know whether you were involved much in that at all. But both of them were women or female looking.
Yes.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, you know, we have also designed various kinds of bots, so online virtual agents, and they were also female. And I think the reason for that is that women are more accepted. So technologies that look like women and behave like women and speak like women are better tolerated by the whole of society. It's interesting. Not many people know about it, but it's actually confirmed in various kinds of projects, scientific projects and research that actually both men and women tolerate it better. Well, if they have to talk to a machine, when it's a human that is a woman. So that's, I guess, an interesting point. And also, when you think about those most famous humanoid robots on Earth, they are really females, you know. Maybe they generate less fear because humanoids per se can generate a lot of fear, I think, and people tend to be a bit afraid of them. What is that really that I'm talking to? Can I classify it? Is it a human or not a human? And they easily get confused. And I just think that this is the reason why when it's a woman, probably that effect is not as strong, that negative effect is not as strong.
So why are we trying to make robots look like humans?
Well, I'm not sure if we are doing it, really, because on a large scale. There are some interesting projects, such as Bina 48 or Sophia, and several others.
Sophia was made a citizen of Saudi Arabia.
Yes, exactly. Well,
what was that about?
That was a big PR move, I think, on the side of the government of Saudi Arabia that is trying to attract researchers to do AI in Saudi Arabia, because AI is clearly like a big thing now, and they have, I would say, a lot of money to spend on that project. And in that sense, when they grant citizenship to a robot, they make it big and they make it very visible that this is, you know, that what they're trying to do and where they want to go. But apart from that, you asked the question about humanoid robots, and I think it's a very interesting question because I don't think it's a mainstream tendency. So artificial intelligence generally develops rather to create programs that are very good at machine learning and can perform various tasks as good as humans or way better than humans. But the issue of humanoid robots is really marginal, but it's very visible. So there was this very interesting hypothesis in the 70s. Have you heard about the Uncanny Valley effect?
I have heard about it, but you better explain it to me again.
It's a very interesting hypothesis and also a concept that was discovered by a Japanese researcher, psychologist, who noticed that when people have to interact with humanoid machines that are hard to classify for them, so they don't know really if they're talking to a human or not, they become very anxious and scared. And even though many researchers also at MIT were trying to develop humanoid machines, they were failing because customers or users didn't want to interact with them. They were afraid of them. Whereas when they were designing, machines that were just as intelligent but looked like boxes and or like microwaves and they were very easy to classify, that was okay. And people were happy to interact with them. So I think we have a big tendency now in social robotics actually not to create machines that look like humans, but rather to create those that could possibly think or behave more like humans but wouldn't look like humans. When you think about Amazon Alexa, for instance, it's just a box, you know. It's a box that is smarter than Bina 48 in many ways, but it looks like a box.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because and it seems to me people like you researching it and developing artificial intelligence would want to not antagonize human beings.
Absolutely not. And we don't think really this is a way to go. I think it's interesting to experiment with some features of our ways of interacting. So it's interesting to create like embodied robots that can move and then can approach you or make certain gestures and so on. But if this uncanny valley effect is that strong, and it seems like that it is a very strong effect that still lasts, despite the fact that we're more exposed to technologies now than we have ever been before, well, then I think we should drop that issue of humanoid machines. We can have a few interesting examples that trigger debates, such as Sophia, for instance, or Bina 48, because they allow us to think beyond certain horizons. But on the other hand, I really don't think that this will be like a large issue unless, well, sex robots develop.
I was going to say, what about sex robots? And that's where I presume humanoid robots are important.
Well, it's true that now this is, I would say not a big trend yet, but it's on the rise. And I think we can expect more of such sex robots in the future. I'm not sure if these will be essentially really humanoid robots, or will they be just very limited machines with very, you know, limited abilities to really communicate in various ways with humans. So I would leave that aside. In a sense, this is not artificial intelligence per se. This is something else. This is just sex industry.
Well, on that note, we better leave it there. We've run out of time. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
I've been talking to Alexandra Progolinska, who is the research fellow at MIT and also assistant professor at Kosminski University, and a PhD in artificial intelligence.